The views expressed in the following program are those of the writers and producers and do not necessarily reflect the views of KORC, its underwriters, or community airwaves.
You're listening to KORC News, Music, and Civics. I'm Trevor Sayre. On Monday, June 24th at 5 p.m., there will be an election information session regarding the City Councilor November 2024 general election. Presenters of this session will explain elected office in Corvallis and provide information to prospective candidates on the process of running for office. This event will not be a forum for debating issues, nor will it address how to campaign for office. This meeting will be held at the Madison Avenue Meeting Room, 500 Southwest Madison Avenue. On Tuesday, June 25th at 4:30 p.m., the Climate Action Advisory Board meeting will be held in person at the Madison Avenue Meeting Room, 500 Southwest Madison Avenue. The meeting will also be held virtually. See CorvallisOregon.gov for details on how to join the meeting online. On Wednesday, June 26th at 5 p.m., the Corvallis Forest Stewardship Plan Update Task Force will be meeting at the Madison Avenue Meeting Room, 500 Southwest Madison Avenue. The meeting will also be held virtually. See CorvallisOregon.gov for details on how to join. For KORC News, Music, and Civics, I'm Trevor Sayre.
The Benton County Board of Commissioners has endorsed a proposal to trim back on creating detailed minutes from its public meetings, according to Alex Powers, reporting in the Corvallis Gazette Times. Apparently, county staff is experiencing difficulties in keeping up with preparing minutes that include not just motions and how each commissioner voted, but also that summarized discussion on issues and public testimony. It takes county workers 9 hours to type up detailed minutes from a typical 3-hour meeting. The result? The county apparently is months, if not years, behind on posting minutes from some public meetings. But there's a problem with bare bones meetings. But there's a problem with bare bones minutes from meetings. Too often, you lose the intent or the reasoning behind a certain decision. Automated transmission services such as Otter could produce transcripts of meetings, but those still require human editing. A better bet might be to summarize some of that detail and include timestamps to YouTube recordings of those particular meetings so that curious members of the public, you know, constituents, don't have to wade through 3 hours of video from meetings to find the detail that they're interested in. Now, here's another development that might be of use to the county. At its Worldwide Developer Conference recently, Apple unveiled hundreds of new features, big and small, but one, which was a single sentence, dropped an hour and 36 minutes into Apple's presentation, caught the attention of both journalists and developers. That's right. You'll soon be able to use your iPhone to record interviews over the phone. And after you hang up, your phone will transcribe these recordings for you. According to Joshua Benton, no, he's not related to Benton County, who writes for NeimanLab.org, the transcription process used to take up conservatively 172% of journalists' time. Now, Apple's version might be subpar in various ways. It won't be officially released until iOS 18 in September at earliest. And since it uses Apple Intelligence, whose release date is even fuzzier, it could be longer than that. Now, there is a beta version of iOS 18 out, but the call recording feature apparently isn't in it. The transcription, at least, will likely be limited to only the most recent and powerful iPhones. Apple will also announce that this call is being recorded to both parties, something that's a legal requirement in some states, but maybe an annoyance in others. But this could be a great solution for Benton County and as well as other counties to completely transcribe meetings that are held with the public and post those meetings easily, something that should take way less than 9 hours. Transparency in government is something that we the people should demand of our elected officials. Benton County, are you listening? We hope so. For KORC News, I'm Lava Lamp Larry.
You're listening to KORC. I'm Nick Martin. Court proceedings are moving forward in the federal lawsuit filed by Ward 5 Councilor Charlene Ellis against the City of Corvallis. This is in relation to the charter violation Ellis is accused of violating at a September council meeting last year. In April, Councillor Ellis's lawyers filed arguments in relation to the section of the charter at question, which reads, "Nothing in this section shall be construed, however, as prohibiting the council, while in open session, from discussing with or suggesting to the manager, fully and freely, anything pertaining to the city affairs or the interests of the city," unquote. According to the Gazette Times, the motion says Ellis's statements at the meeting, quote, "were made in furtherance of discussing with or suggesting to the manager fully and freely anything pertaining to the city affairs or the interests of the city," unquote. Shepherd's presence at either meeting was not imperative, they argued, as nothing in the charter section suggests the, quote, "city manager must be present at a public meeting for a councillor to safely speak," unquote. Ellis's lawyers also claim that Section 23F is overbroad because it, quote, "reaches to speech unlikely to cause harm," unquote. The city thinks otherwise. In a rebuttal submitted in May, city lawyers argue that only what they've deemed the, quote, "influence or coercion clause" is relevant to the case, and Ellis has failed to challenge that clause appropriately. They also say that Ellis was not discussing or attempting to discuss anything with the city manager, but made a directive at the council meeting. As we've reported before, Councillor Ellis is being accused of violating the city charter. The allegation stems from comments she made during a September 18th council meeting, in which she made a motion to direct city manager Mark Shepherd to post a job opening for a climate specialist for the Climate Action Advisory Board, or CAB. It was this proposed motion that got her into trouble. Here is her making the motion.
Is that the Climate Action Advisory Board requests that the council direct the city manager to post the full-time job position of climate program specialist within 2 weeks and provide an update on the hiring process every meeting until filled.
So what exactly is Councillor Ellis accused of? According to a resolution intended to be presented at the December 4th council meeting, her actions at both the September 13th meeting and the subsequent September 18th city council meeting violated Section 23, subsection F of the Charter, which refers to interference in administration and elections. The section states, quote, "Neither the mayor nor any member of the council shall in any manner, directly or indirectly, by suggestion or otherwise, attempt to influence or coerce the manager in the making of any appointment or removal of any officer or employee. A violation of the foregoing provisions of this section shall forfeit the office of the offender." For some background, the Climate Action Advisory Board is a body tasked with helping Corvallis meet the greenhouse gas emissions target set forth in the Corvallis Climate Action Plan and to make policy recommendations to the City Council in that regard when needed. Councillor Ellis both chairs the group as well as acts as council liaison. The group utilizes the skills of a climate specialist to help with meeting operations, as well as work to secure funds related to climate initiatives, among other things. Two people previously holding this position had since left, leaving a gap. It was this gap the board discussed at that September 13th CAB meeting. Fearing the advisory board would not be able to continue meeting due to this vacancy, a motion was passed to bring this vacancy-filling request to the next city council meeting. Fast forward to that city council meeting on the 18th, where Ellis made her motion we heard earlier. It is those two moments that are the focus of the accusations. In an email to Gazette Times reporters, Ellis said she will be running for re-election in November. She said, quote, "It's also my understanding that the case becomes moot if I win. I would rather have a clear decision moving forward so that this cannot happen to anyone else and that we can adjust the charter accordingly in January when we plan on convening the task force on the charter," unquote. The Corvallis City Council has begun discussions on reviewing and possibly amending the charter. They have asked city attorneys to review the document and write a report addressing concerns, ambiguities, and the like within it. Thank you to the Gazette Times article entitled "Ellis Lawsuit Against Corvallis Has Both Sides Parsing City Charter," written by Cosiso Agoid. This is Nick Martin with KORC.
You're listening to KORC News, Music, and Civics, a program heard every Sunday from 1 to 2 p.m. here on KORC, repeated Mondays from 5 to 6 p.m. This is Dan Kroll in the Southtown studio, and I am joined by Anna Cassily. She is a trainer in communication and conflict resolution skills through her business, Growing Peace, which is here in Corvallis. And she has been doing this kind of work for about 30 years, and she joins us today. Thanks again for your time.
Thank you so much, Dan, for having me. It's really good to be here.
I understand that you have an upcoming class. I heard about this because I personally get emails through the Sustainable Corvallis Google Group listserv, which is through the Corvallis Sustainability Coalition, and I heard about your class. Tell us more about this upcoming class that you have.
Yes, this is going to be a six-week series on Monday evenings. It'll be held at the Friends Meeting House here in Corvallis from 6 to 8 in the evening. And we're going to cover really the basics of how to be a more effective communicator, how to listen better to hear what's up for someone else, and how to express what's up for you in a way that they're more apt to be able to hear it.
That is something that I think in modern times is more lost than a lot of us may realize.
Yeah, it's definitely an art that we have to put some conscious attention to, because many of us were modeled, let's just say, maybe not the most effective ways. A lot of the time we came out of a generation where it was power over, you do what I say because I say it. And while there's a time and place for that, what we're not teaching our kids is how to work out differences in a more mutually satisfactory way. So that's the focus of this class, is how do you find resolutions that really meet the needs of all the parties involved to the extent that's possible.
Who is the target demographic for this class?
Wow, I would say adults, but when you within adults, it's pretty much anyone, because the school skills that we cover are so basic, whether it's for the workplace, whether it's for working with your kids, whether it's for working with your partner, whatever, in community groups, if there's things that need to be communicated more effectively. It's really the same skill set that are just applied in little different variations.
Yeah. And in the modern world, it really does feel like a number of us are just coming from a number of different places. There are great books out there like Talking to Strangers by Malcolm Gladwell, which if you listen to that book on tape or just read the book, one of the takeaways I would say is that we are all coming from a different place in communicating, both as the communicator and then our receiver could be coming from a place that we don't even put into our realm of reasoning, and what we're saying is not landing at all the way we intend because of the receiver being in such a different space than we may understand.
Yeah, that's so true. That's so true. And there are wonderful resources out there for becoming a better communicator. I'll say this particular class is pretty much grounded in nonviolent communications based on the teachings of Marshall Rosenberg. I studied with him many years ago and have continued to train and teach this basic body of knowledge for many years now, and have found it to be one of the most helpful for me personally. And as I share it with people, I see real results in their ability to communicate more effectively.
Can you tell us what are some of the tenets of nonviolent communication, also known as NVC, by the way, its acronym?
Yeah, NVC, it's often referred to. I think for me, it's really captured in one statement by Marshall, and that's that judgment, criticism, and blame are tragic expressions of unmet needs. Tragic because it's the way we're least likely to get them met. So a lot of what NVC works on is how do you express your needs in a way that's not judging, blaming, or demanding of the other person. And when you hear someone judging, blaming, or criticizing yourself, how can you put on a little sort of translator so that rather than taking it personally, I flip this little switch in my brain that goes, oh, this person has an unmet need. And it just really shifts how I'm then able to approach them. How can we work together to meet your needs, to meet my needs in a way that's mutually satisfying?
And in our culture, that may seem like a radical concept, but if we do start looking at communication in new ways, we might just find that there are more effective ways to get what we want. And Anna Cassely is doing an upcoming course. They will be meeting at the Friends House in Corvallis. Can you tell us again the details of when this six-week, six-part course will be starting and taking place?
Yes, it'll begin Monday, July 15th, and run for 6 weeks on Monday evenings till August 19th. And that's at the Friends Meeting House from 6 to 8 at 3311 Northwest Polk Avenue.
You can always look up Corvallis Friends Meeting Place online if you need the address. And you have a website, which is growingpeace.net, which is the business that you run for over 30 years now.
Yeah, and so if people want more details or to register, pre-registration is required for the course. I do keep it fairly small so we can have lots of exchange. So I encourage people to go to the website and you can register right there, or you can call me if you want more information. My number is 541-301-7993. I'm happy to talk with you about the class, see if it feels like a good fit.
Have you taught classes like this in Corvallis in the past?
You know, that's interesting. I've recently moved here during COVID, and most of my teaching has been online since I've gotten here. So this is kind of a new face-to-face opportunity for me to really connect with the community, and I'm so looking forward to having in-person classes now. I've done it for many years. I was in Southern Oregon before here, but this was going to be nice to be back face-to-face in Corvallis.
Yeah, there's certainly an element of face-to-face that you won't get online or through Zoom or whatever.
Yeah, yeah. And hopefully it will build a community of people who really want to come together and support one another to be more effective communicators, to develop the compassion that's so fundamental to nonviolent communication. It's actually often called compassionate communication, because sometimes people think, oh, I'm not violent, this isn't for me. But it's more about developing that compassion. Violent just being any time we're using our power over someone to get our way. So trying to move away from that to more collaborative solutions.
I can say from my own personal experience, just looking at my own communication patterns as pointed out to me years ago by somebody who was well-versed in NVC or nonviolent communication, that I have violent communication all through my blueprint. It's sometimes very hard to even realize it until someone points it out, or if you look into NVC.
Yeah, and I will say, I think that is an interesting aspect of the class I'll be teaching. What I found over the years is that people can learn the skills, but when someone pushes their button, those skills are out the window. So I do incorporate some centering of mind and body into the class so that we can develop the mental capacity when we start to get triggered to take that breath, come back to center, and choose to do it differently.
Yeah. That's important. It can be a very stressful society to live in these days with all the demands and the weights we carry being pulled in various directions. So a class like this, can you tell us, Anna Cassely, can you tell us one more time the name of this class that starts on July 15th?
Yes, it's called Communicate for a Change. So whatever change you're trying to bring about in your life, I think this class will offer you some potential nuggets to help move forward with that.
And if folks would like to learn more, can you please give the website one more time?
www.growingpeace.net.
Anna Cassely is a trainer in communication and conflict resolution skills. She has a business here in town called Growing Peace. She has been practicing for about 30 years and was kind enough to join us today on KORC News, Music, and Civics. Thanks again for your time.
Thank you so much, Dan. I really appreciate it.
This series of classes is offered at a sliding scale of $60 to $120 with work exchange and scholarships available.
Hey, this is Phil Farrell for KORC Civics and News. This interview took place on June 19th of this year, 2024.
Just quick. Hey, this is Phil Farrell with KORC, and we're just finishing up here at the first open source hip-hop event at Old World Deli, and I'm here with the coordinator, Ben, so he's going to tell you a little bit about it.
Yeah, so we're just trying to create a hub for creative expression around the hip-hop genre with a diverse notion of what that means. So tonight we had myself doing wacky Animal Collective inspired beats and yelling and rapping. Then we had some really sick, just straight up lyrical underground rap stuff from Portland. And then we had an open mic. We had like jungle music on an MPC. Dr. Johnny Fever dropped some really cool instrumentals. We had a couple of performers, Snakes and Pope Cyrus the Seventh, just kind of did some of their songs. So it was really fun. We had maybe 30 people all just kind of vibing, hanging out at the Old World Deli. Next one is July 27th. We don't know who's playing yet, but it will be fun and good. We'll have, again, a visiting artist from Portland and a local artist, and then open mic, share your art. Any kind of beats are welcome. Any kind of spoken word expression is welcome. So it's an open space for creativity and just trying to make it feel easy and possible for hip-hop people to come freestyle, get weird, and express themselves.
And where can they reach out to you?
Yeah, I guess just find me on Instagram at Ben's Materia, BENSMATERIA. And I'm probably going to make an open source hip hop Instagram at some point, but right now it's just my Instagram.
Sweet. I know I had a good time up there performing, and it's cool to see like open mic with and give the producers a shot. So appreciate it. And yeah, this was great. Again, Phil Farrell at the open source first event at Old World Deli.
Again, this is Phil Farrell at the first open source hip hop event at the Old World Deli. This took place this last week on June 19th, 2024. And the next one will take place July 27th of 2024. Thanks for listening to KORC. Stay tuned.
It's going to be partly cloudy throughout the afternoon. Today's high will be near 73. Tonight we'll have partly cloudy skies with a low near 50 and the moon in its waning gibbous phase. It's going to be sunny tomorrow and Tuesday, with highs tomorrow near 80. Highs will be in the mid-80s by Tuesday, cooling off a bit by Wednesday and Thursday, when highs will be in the low 70s. This is KORC.
The following piece is from the Gazette Times, entitled As I See It, by Rick Stagenborg, who is the president of the Linus Pauling chapter of Veterans for Peace. Rick says, "Why do good people support genocide? Hoping to understand why good people support genocidal behavior, I invited a Zionist friend to coffee to exchange thoughts on the Israeli invasion of Gaza. We met three times, including twice after the International Court of Justice ruled in January that there was a plausible case that Israel's tactics constituted genocide, an opinion more than 500 genocide experts had expressed in a public letter released October 15th. The International Court of Justice ruling cited Israel's systematic commission of war crimes in its response to the Hamas attack, crimes that continue today. This is why warrants are being prepared by the International Criminal Court for the arrest of Netanyahu and his defense minister, and why the International Court of Justice ordered Israel to stop its Rafah offensive to allow aid in. The conversations with my friend were enlightening. She would state her opinions about why the assault on the Palestinian people was justified, and I would cite factual sources that undermine the assumptions behind her arguments. At her request, I supplied links to the sources of my claims, including Israeli newspapers and mainstream press articles citing Israeli sources. She said little about the information I shared. Instead, she raised new arguments each time we met for why Israel had no choice but to continue its wholesale slaughter of the population of Gaza. I eventually realized that she was able to support the destruction of an entire people because she didn't want to confront the facts. I think she suspected that knowing the whole truth might undermine her deeply held beliefs about Israel and perhaps Zionism itself. I haven't heard from my friend lately. I miss talking to her. Until October 7th, she always had a bright smile and a carefree, friendly demeanor. I'm sure we had much in common besides membership in a local interfaith group and concern for the lives endangered by the 100-year-old conflict that has exploded since October 7th. The critical difference between us was that her concern seemed almost exclusively for the safety of Israelis. She seemed adamant that the ongoing bombardment and starvation of tens of thousands of innocent civilians was an appropriate response to a single attack by a specific group among them. I wonder, has she ever seen the pictures of the Palestinian children mutilated by Israeli bombs, or those emaciated as a result of Israel's use of starvation as a weapon? I suspect that if my friend were to acknowledge the reality that what is happening to Gaza's civilians is not the result of a war, but of systematic war crimes, she would understand why millions are outraged by Israel's actions. Perhaps then she would realize that slaughtering civilians will not make Israelis safer. Despite our differences, I still regard this person as my friend. I refuse to let a conflict between us diminish my regard for her as a human. This attitude is not based solely on my spiritual beliefs. It is an essential part of waging peace. True peace requires us to look beyond our differences, even when seemingly insurmountable, to see the humanity of others beneath their fear and anger. We must abandon the notion that any human is, quote, the other, and beyond redemption. When your identity is based on membership in the human family, these illusions fall away. A lasting peace in Palestine and Israel will require justice. There can be no justice unless negotiations are based on recognition of mutual rights and acknowledgement of facts. However painful it may be to surrender one's cherished fantasies, that pain is nothing compared to the suffering Zionists are causing Gazans and all Palestinians. This was an article in the Corvallis Gazette Times, As I See It, by Rick Stagenborg, from June 18, 2024, Why Do People Support Genocidal Behavior? You're listening to KORC.
I am joined now by Barbara Christensen. She is the Public Health Nurse Program Manager who supervises WIC, Reproductive Health, Immunizations, and Perinatal Maternal Child Family Health Programs. That's quite a mouthful. Thanks for joining us today.
Thank you so much, Dan. Yes, my name is Barbara. I do go by Barbie, and my pronouns are she, they, and I actually just started in this role in February, and it has been a true pleasure and privilege to begin working with Benton County and with all the amazing staff that have been working in these programs and in public health. Very excited.
So when you got started, did you have all these responsibilities right away?
I've been lucky enough to have a lot of support from my supervisors to really kind of scaffold it in. But yes, I started supervising and managing the programs and the staff in these programs from that first week, and it's been just a lovely whirlwind, to be honest.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. Well, we're talking today because as we record this, it's the end of May. May, of course, is Maternal Mental Health Month, and one of the core areas of the Benton County Home Visiting Nurses focuses on is mental health during and after pregnancy. I think we should note that the leading cause of death for moms and people who have babies is suicide and domestic violence.
Shocking, isn't it? I actually used to work in labor and delivery. We spend so much time, money, resources really focusing on those medical complications and those medical risks, hemorrhage, preeclampsia, medical conditions. And I think it's really shocking when people learn or realize that mental health, for the person experiencing it, or, you know, in the case of domestic violence, the mental health sometimes of the person perpetrating the abuse is really the leading cause and the leading risk factor in our maternal morbidity and mortality crisis. It's one of the reasons I'm so passionate about this work, and I really truly believe it's one of the reasons our nurses and all of our team is so passionate about mental health and really embedding that in a trauma-informed approach into all of the services we provide. And truly, you know, it has generational impacts. Anxiety just by itself can really impact relationships with ourselves. You know, in this case, I'm going to be speaking a little bit about our home visiting program for new parents. It can really impact relationships with babies and impact their growth and development. And we deserve help is the bottom line. We deserve help. Help is out there, and it really isn't ever too late to get help. We'll be talking about some resources specifically if you know somebody who's struggling with their mental health. But I'm really hoping to talk a little bit more about the home visiting service specifically today that's available to every single resident in Benton County who has a baby.
Why don't we talk about that? We have three nurses.
We do have three nurses who are just wonderful. They are so experienced, very highly trained. I want to say between the three of them, they have over 26 years of nursing experience. 19 of those years are specifically in home visiting, which, you know, home visiting is really unique. We're meeting people where they're at, where they live. Sometimes people who are experiencing homelessness, we're meeting them in other places. We're available to meet out in the community, out in the clinics, but really just meeting people where they're at with their babies. And I say that in the physical sense and also in the mental sense. Like, we serve people who are highly resourced, have, are really connected, have insurance, have all of the resources, you know, that somebody kind of thinks of when they think of what you might need to have a baby and support yourself and your baby, all the way to people who are under-resourced, who lack or don't have those privileges. We're very lucky also to have Carol, one of our nurses, who speaks Spanish fluently and really serves that population in Benton County in their home language as well. So it is just such a unique service. One of our programs, Family Connects Oregon, through some legislation by the state, is also available at no cost to every single family who brings home a baby. Whether you had the baby yourself, whether you are, you know, the other parent or a caregiver, a foster parent, if you are taking care of a newborn in Benton County, we would love to serve you.
And that includes people with private insurance or OHP. It doesn't matter.
Or no insurance. If people aren't connected yet with insurance or don't think they're eligible, we also help with that. And yes, that is not a barrier at all, specific to Family Connects Oregon. We do have other home visiting programs for people who are pregnant, babies first, children with like highly complex medical needs, Cocoon. And those do have some eligibility restrictions. For OHP members, we have Babies First at no cost, Cocoon as well. But Family Connects is sort of that portal for opening the door to home visiting that you may not get anywhere else. It's a benefit of your insurance, if you have insurance, like I said. And if you don't, we still provide the service at no cost.
FCO, or Family Connects mm-hmm. Oregon, is online. So if people listening do want to just get that ball rolling, yeah. What is the website?
Thank you. Yeah, if you do a quick Google search of Family Connects, you'll find a lot of information all throughout the state. But if you would like to get referred to our program specifically, I'd love for you to visit Benton County Health Department's website. we're on there. We have a page, Perinatal Maternal Child Family Health Services, and you can contact one of our program specialists to get referred. We are doing some updates, which I'm really excited about, to improve our referral process. But if you get on the website and you find that number, you will find us.
We are joined by Barbara Christensen, who is the Public Health Nurse Program Manager. She also supervises WIC, Reproductive Health, Immunizations, and the Perinatal Maternal Child Family Health Programs. And right now we're talking about home visits, which we do have three nurses in Benton County available to visit during those postpartum days. What might a typical visit from a home visit nurse look like?
That's a great question, Dan, and I would love to kind of demystify that experience for anybody who thinks they might be interested now or in the future or knows of somebody. The first thing I think it's really important, besides no cost, this is a voluntary program. So if your provider or, you know, your OB refers and you don't want this service, it is completely up to you. So it's voluntary at all times. If you decide you want it, we will set up a home visit at a time and a location, you know, that's convenient for you, and we'll come to you. One of our nurses will touch base with you over the phone. We also text if texting is easier for you. We're sort of in that era, I think, now where texting is easier for a lot of us, especially with a newborn. And then, you know, the nurse will kind of do a little screening on the phone and see if there's any immediate needs that you have, any immediate questions they can answer, or referrals. And then once the visit actually happens, they can be a little bit long. So I think some people are used to, you know, really quick visits with your doctor, 5 minutes, 10 minutes, 15 minutes, right? Unless there's, you know, something maybe more that's needed. But these visits are typically about an hour and a half. They can go even longer if people are, you know, needing more time. So we really are flexible in that. We really try to schedule when baby's about 3 weeks old. That's kind of like in between the 2 week pediatrician appointment and, right, this the typical 6 week postpartum checkup. So really a time of opportunity, I think, for parents, for caregivers of newborns. I'm a parent of four myself. The 3 week, you know, to 6 week period, even when everything's going well, it can be rough. So number one, we're there to support. We're there to really provide the services that you need. But what that can look like for many people is a screening, an assessment, kind of a little head to toe, like what's going on with your medical needs, what's going on with baby's medical needs. We do, you know, like a height and weight check, measure the head, make sure baby's growing well, check on any feeding concerns, whether you're breast or chest feeding or formula feeding or some combination of both. Do you have access to food? You know, these are sometimes we are doing really basic things like helping people get connected to food sources, housing, advocacy. Sometimes, you know, we're even helping people make safety plans or get connected, you know, to resources to help create more safety in their life for themselves, their baby, or their children.
Like if they've got domestic violence issues happening?
Absolutely. And then, I mean, and I'm even thinking like environmental safety, you know, say there's a situation, you know, we're renting and there's mold. Like, we are able to connect with housing and get you connected with those referrals and resources to create a safe environment as much as possible in your home.
That black mold is typical around here.
I hear. Sorry and thank you. Hail from sunny Southern California, and I'm very much learning. This is a totally different environment with totally different needs. And I think that is also what's unique to home visiting is we're really there to listen to you. So we're not coming in with a plan. We're going to come and fix everything and make it all better. We're here to listen to you. What are your needs? What can we help you with? So that screening, that assessment, growth, you know, for baby, of course, those are all kind of basic. But sometimes, you know, we're answering questions like, how do you help grandma learn how to bottle feed in a way that protects your, you know, your milk supply and things like that. So these visits are really adaptable, and that's what I really appreciate about them. We have a lot of tools, we have a lot of resources, but they're really going to be adapted to suit your needs. And beyond that, you know, if you need more visiting outside of that visit, we have the ability to schedule more visits. You can receive up to 4 visits at no cost through Family Connects. And at that point, if there is an ongoing need, we look at eligibility to other programs, whether that's through Benton County, you know, if you have OHP and you would like to enroll in Babies First, or maybe that's, you know, with Healthy Families, another organization. So we really do partner with a lot of the existing resources to get you connected to, again, what do you need? What works for you? Because you're the one taking care of this baby. Like, you're already doing it. We're just here to help.
And during these times when parents have a new baby, it is very common to have some kind of struggles, whether that's mental, whether that's with the relationship. In fact, one of the most common times that you see families split up is shortly after having the baby. I've seen that with a lot of my peers.
Mm. It is. It is so, like I said, you know, even when everything is going well and we're ready, it's hard to really be ready. A baby is a whole human with a whole host of needs. And you know, if we already as full-grown adults, you know, or, you know, if you are a younger parent, a teen parent, we also serve that population and have resources for you. We have our own needs, too. And sometimes we are not meeting our own needs to meet baby's needs, right? And forget about a partner or your friends, right, or those extended relationships. So again, a nurse is not coming in to fix and save everything, right? But they are absolutely there to give some fresh eyes, sometimes some reassurance. You're doing the best you can, right? We're doing the best we can with what we have. And also, you know, looking and seeing maybe some things that we can't see when we are in it, right? And offering a little fresh perspective, or, hey, did you even know about this resource? Or what do you think? And we also do engage other parents. You know, if there's a dad, if there's another parent, we meet the whole family. So it's not just moms taking care of babies, we know that. We really come in, and whoever is going to be taking care of that newborn, we want to help and help support them, because that is what the newborn needs, is more supported caregivers, right? Those layers of support are so crucial.
One thing we are seeing is that in these trying times, we are in a mental health crisis with a lot of people who are untreated and a lot of people without solutions. What is one thing that you'd like people to know who may be struggling with their mental health?
I don't really think this is always a comfort, but you're not alone. You really aren't. You're not alone in this. With all of my privileges and resources, I myself have struggled with mental health, not just during my pregnancies and after. So we aren't alone. And there is help, and people want to help. So one thing I really want people to know about some of the resources that have expanded, if you are at a point where you have lost hope, you have lost curiosity, you are, you know, considering not being here with us anymore, There is a national number we can now call. It's 988. You can call or text this number. It's the suicide helpline. And if you are a mom or a person who's just had a baby, we also have some specific resources I'd like to talk about from Postpartum Support International. These are available at no cost. They do have a call or text line as well. You can text HELP. HELP to 1-800-944-4773. You would press 2 for English. If you need assistance in Spanish, you would press 1. You can also go online to their website, which is postpartum.net, postpartum.net. And these are available not just in English. They have them in Spanish, and I believe they're expanding into other languages as well. But these are no-cost online support groups that you can sign up for. I love referring people to these groups. One, because they're free. Two, they're virtual. You can attend them from your phone, from your car, wherever you are at. And also, they just have a really great variety. I'm just going to name a few, but there's some general ones for perinatal mental health. There's ones for military, military spouses, people who have experienced loss. I think sometimes people forget that, you know, there's a postpartum period, and sometimes there's no baby. And so we have support and groups for that as well through that organization, which I'm so grateful for. They even have groups for people who are trying to conceive. You know, there's just such a range of experiences that people have and need support that's really tailored towards that experience. And I really would just encourage you to maybe not take the step, but to start to consider. You know, maybe you're not ready to reach out. Maybe you're not ready to ask for help. But I would just really consider, you know, what would that look like for you? What would help look like for you, and who? Maybe it's a conversation with somebody to start with, right? Maybe it's a trusted friend, or maybe it's one of our home visiting nurses. We would love to hear from you. We would love to get connected with you. And if you're a provider or an organization out there in the community that serves people who are having babies, we would also love to hear from you. We're always looking to expand our outreach and our collaboration with other partners and build up referral pathways to really get connected to the people who need us the most.
I think sometimes little factors get overlooked, too. I mean, especially after a pregnancy, you may not remember to eat a square meal or stay hydrated or have the proper vitamins.
Yes. Meal planning, things like that, right? What does it look like to get enough, if you have access to food, to get enough calories to lactate, right? To make milk if you're breastfeeding or chest feeding. And I love that you just bring up, again, there's a whole range of needs, right? And so having somebody come in who is aware of all those needs and can really like take the time to go through them with you and see what is the biggest need for you, and then address that and then move on to the next one. And we just keep going, right? And maybe
just get back into balance.
That's it. As much as we can, you know, like you mentioned, we are in a time where there are limited resources and we do need more than what exists. However, we are so fortunate to have the resources we have, and really getting people connected to them and learning about them, I think, is a start to growing those resources and really investing more in them so that there are more resources available to us. This is generational work. I really appreciate the boots on the ground work that our field nurses are doing, you know, out there in the community, home visiting, doing outreach events, and just their commitment. I am so grateful, and it's such a privilege to supervise and watch the work and watch the impacts ripple out, not just into these families, but into the community, and know that this is rippling out into our future as well.
Well, it does sound like very fulfilling work and very valuable work. So if people want to enroll in the home visiting program through the Benton County Public Health Department, how can they do that?
We, like I said, are still updating some of our referral pathways, but if you go to our website at www.health.bentoncountyor.gov, you'll find us under infant services for infants, children, and families. And we do have a webpage within that for perinatal, maternal, child, and family health. But I really also just want to offer, you can call or text our referral specialist at 541-760-1834. You can call or text this number whether you speak English or Spanish. We are ready to answer or get back to you as soon as we can. And then we also do have an email. We just ask that you don't send any private health information through that email unless you have the ability to encrypt it. But you are welcome to ask questions or ask for referral forms and things like that through this email. And that'll be pmcfh@bentoncountyor.gov. And we will be ready to respond to pretty much whatever request you send to us, whether that's for more information, like I said, whether you're a provider or an organization wanting to build a referral pathway for new parents, or whether you're a new parent yourself or you're about to be, or you know somebody who is and you would like some more information about the programs we offer.
We would like to thank Barbara Christensen, who joins us today. She is the Public Health Nurse Program Manager. She also supervises WIC, immunizations, reproductive health, and perinatal maternal child family health programs for the Benton County Public Health Department. Thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you so much, Dan, and thank you to each of you out there showing up as best you can with everything you have. We really appreciate all of our community members.
You're listening to KORC News, Music and Civics. I'm Trevor Sayre. On Monday, June 24th at 5 p.m., there will be an election information session regarding the City Council or November 2024 general election. Presenters of this session will explain elected office in Corvallis and provide information to prospective candidates on the process of running for office. This event will not be a forum for debating issues, nor will it address how to campaign for office. This meeting will be held at the Madison Avenue Meeting Room, 500 Southwest Madison Avenue. On Tuesday, June 25th at 4:30 p.m., the Climate Action Advisory Board meeting will be held in person at the Madison Avenue Meeting Room, 500 Southwest Madison Avenue. The meeting will also be held virtually. See CorvallisOregon.gov for details on how to join the meeting online. On Wednesday, June 26th at 5 p.m., the Corvallis Forest Stewardship Plan Update Task Force will be meeting at the Madison Avenue Meeting Room, 500 Southwest Madison Avenue. The meeting will also be held virtually. See CorvallisOregon.gov for details on how to join. For KORC News, Music, and Civics, I'm Trevor Sarah.
How long have you been playing for, lad?
I've been playing for 22 years on the pipes.
Is that the same instrument you've owned all these years?
No. I built this set myself. I've had this one for... I've been playing it for about 10 years now. But I've been through four different sets. One of the other ones I still have, but I had two older sets which I've sold since.
A very fine playing indeed. And you as well, lass. How long have you been playing on the whistle?
About 10 years.
Mm-hmm. Does your duo have a name?
Yeah, we call ourselves Pipe Dance.
Very well. Patrick O'Leary here on behalf of KORC News, Music and Civics. Going to be getting a drink in the old pub soon. But I was drawn to the music, brought a tear to me eye.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Patrick, for coming by.
Well, what is your name, lass?
My name's Nora.
And I'm Gary.
And where are y'all from?
Right here.
We live here in Lincoln City, Oregon.
I was brought in by the artisan fire.
Oh, nice.
I never miss one of these as I'm on the road.
Awesome. But, so I see you're wearing a Victoria, B.C.
Were you just there?
Only because I found it at a garage sale. $3.
You'll find some amazing Irish music up in Victoria Island if you go up there.
A fair Irishman like myself can't afford that, but soon enough I do want to go, and I'll take me jacket.
Yeah, take your jacket.
It says Victoria, B.C.
What part of Ireland are you from?
Clare County.
Very good.
Oh, I was doing the Clare. This is the Clare.
Yeah, yeah.
I noticed that. Let me get to recording. It's windy here, but let me try.
They're born being able to do that, right?
An authentic Irish jig indeed.
Martin Hayes is one of my heroes. Clare fiddler Martin Hayes.
Oh, that
yes.
Beautiful playing from that lad.
Yeah. Great ambassador of the music. I've learned a lot from him. Yes.
So what are you doing here now?
Just visiting on my way to Rockaway Beach.
Mm.
Just thinking about stopping in the pub, but not if I want to drive.
I definitely recommend it.
Yeah.
They do their lovely beer there. They make it there themselves.
Yeah. Do they have Guinness on top?
No.
They don't have Guinness.
There's
all
only one
home.
Place.
Home. It's a local brewery,
nice,
so everything's brewed in-house right over there.
They do have a reasonable stout, I would say.
Very tempting indeed.
Mm-hmm.
Are you going to play any more music?
Yes, we're going to be playing all afternoon here till what? Till 4?
3.
3?
Yep.
45 minutes.
45
minutes. We got another 45 minutes.
Yeah. May I kindly ask to record another jig?
Sure,
let's
yeah.
Do a jig this time.
Yeah, we'll
that
do some jigs. The Black Rogue set. It's okay. A Black Rogue, Jim Ward's, and. Let's see. I know what it is.
We are recording live here at the Artisan Fair on the roadside on the south end of Lincoln City. Patrick O'Leary on behalf of KRRC News, Music, and Civics.
Thank you.
There we go.
Beautiful plan. Patrick O'Leary, on behalf of KRRC News, Music, and Civics, at a roadside artisan's fair that I happened across by chance. Your lucky charms with me today. Please say your name again for me, wee recording device here, please.
Nora. I'm Nora.
And I'm Gary.
And yes. Tell us again where you are from.
We're from here in Lincoln.
Okay. Lincoln City, Oregon.
This is recorded on site, Lincoln City, Oregon.
Yes.
On a windy June 14th, 2024.
Awesome. Thanks for stopping by, Patrick.
Nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you all.
Yeah.
And top of the afternoon to everyone listening to KRRC News, Music, and Civics.